show, they called it Much Binding in the Marsh. Well, I got that from Morton and Marsh. In the very first episodes, I had a stuttering CO, commanding officer, really did stutter, and quite unusual to find that in the Air Force. But anyway, while we're at Morton and Marsh, that was the place where we had to crew up with myself. I had to find a pilot, and the pilot had to go and find a navigator and a couple of air gunners and a bomb aimer. So we crewed up, and this fella came along to me and he says, you got a pilot yet? No. Do you want to fly with me? Oh, yeah. Young bloke, 19-year-old, mind you, 19. Just got his wings. And that's the greatest stroke of luck in your life, you know, when you pick someone like that who's, well, he was educated, he was keen, and he was also lucky. But he's unlucky enough to pick a navigator who didn't have a clue. And it wasn't very long before we found ourselves in trouble one night. From there, we did this Morton and Marsh, we did night flying, which the idea was to go up and fly in between towns and go nowhere near the big places, otherwise you'd be in strife. So this one night, the gunners would come in and listen to the briefing of where we had to fly and so forth, and we definitely weren't going out over the channel, but this night, I don't know what was going on between the pilot and the navigator, because I was a wireless operator and I was shut off from the rest of the crew except when I wanted to tune in, and I was just listening in for recalls and things like that, and then all of a sudden and I was sitting underneath the pilot, and any bit of light my pilot would really scream about, turn that light out, pop, you know. But all of a sudden anyway, we got in a cone of, I don't know, about five or six searchlights, and the whole aeroplane was lit up like Luna Park. And of course, we shouldn't have been in that position at all. So Graham, the pilot, said, oh, I'll shoot off the colours of the day and hope. And it was only a matter, I suppose, of 30 seconds, but until I shot this colours of the day off, and the lights went off, and then Graham says, I'll use the radio to get home, which I did, and of course when we get there, it was a debriefing, where have you been? And of course one of the rear gunners said, I saw us go out over the coastline, I didn't know, you know, I thought we were going to go there. So we'd been out over France somewhere, but by the time we'd worked through all that, we'd been out over France and come back in over London, and we shouldn't have been anywhere near there. We got away with it, and it was lucky it happened, because Graham sacked him, the navigator. He said, that's the finish of you. Won't have him again, I want a new navigator. And with that, we were lucky, we picked up a navigator who'd already done a tour of operations and got through them, so. And I think it was just about the same time we got the new, and so then they went on to Halifax, the four engine bombers, and to convert on those, we went to a place near York called Rafforth, and there's a lot of French people there, French flyers. And my pilot had to do, he had an instructor, because it's the first time he'd been flying four engines. And they rushed things through pretty quickly. So Graham's, we picked up this new engineer, navigator, the whole works, except bomb aimer. We got all new fellas. And on Graham's very first initial flight, the four engine, his first solo flight in the four engine, we've got this crew here, and this engineer said, "One engine's heating up, I'll have to feather it, so turn off the one engine." And of course, I'd been with Graham for probably 4 or 5 months now. Other fellas had just arrived, more or less. So they cut off the engine, and we're going to go in and land on three. This big bloke and the others are taking up crash positions and so forth, and I'm just sitting with one foot up on a seat saying, oh, she's all right. In my ignorance, I thought, oh, well, Graham can fly even though it is his first chance on three engines. But he did land it with a bit high, and the oxygen bottle went off the Warren hit me on the shoulder, but otherwise nothing. And for days after, people were slapping Graham in the back and telling what a great pilot he was, and I didn't realise it was so hard, but, you know, we got away with that loud, because a lot of people with more experience, even if they tried to land on three, they didn't make it and crashed and made a big heap of themselves. But anyway, that was at Ruffith, and then from there we went to Driffield to 466 Squadron Bomber Command. And because of all these setbacks, there was my other friend here, which in front of my album, we were together in the army, this fella here, and here I am showing you my album a few days or 50 years later. And in 2 weeks' time, I'm going back to England with this fellow to our 4-group Bomber Command reunion. So I think we're going to make it. It's only 2 weeks to go, and it'll be 50 years on since the war was finished here. But we, of course, you know, VE was months before. And so we were only on squadron for 3 or 4 months before the finish of the war. This bloke got shot down, but was able to, he was one of three that got out. The other ones, if they got shot down quite low, they didn't have much chance of getting out. But they were quite near the end of the war. The Germans followed us back one night, and there hadn't been any action at all. And so people, getting back, they could see their own home base, and I think they're relaxing a bit, and all of a sudden these German fighters are about, and they had a bit of a picnic. I forget just how many they did shoot down, but it was one of those things that got a few quite close to the end of the war. Anyway, the war finished in Europe, and I've got photos here which I'll probably put into a museum sometime of the war damage of after it finished. We went flying around in Germany, that's Cologne Cathedral, and all around. It was quite near a bridge that we went flying around. We took all the ground staff, we'd take quite a few of them, about 7 or 8 at a time, on what we called a cook's tour, and a tour around having a look at the damage that we'd done, and the big open fields that had been ploughed up by big bombs. In other words, they'd missed anything of any consequence by a long way, but that's war, a waste all the way through, isn't it? And when we finished our cook's tours, and there's a photo of some of our ground staff WAFs, one of them is going back next week too. So she married the wing commander, and she's going back to York on the 5th of September 95. So some of us that had arrived fairly late in the Bomber Command, they sent us to a place near Cambridge called, anyway, it was a United States Air Force base during the war, a place called Bassingbourne, and this is where they flew the Flying Fortress and the Liberators out from Bassingbourne, with one of the Air Force bases there. And they were daylight bombing boys, and as they were going out in the morning, they had for daylight bombing, they used to leave some fantastic vapor trails behind them. And I didn't envy those fellas going daylight, because for what they could see the damage they were doing, they could also see a lot more than we at night time. We were pretty well blindfolded, except particularly me as a Wallace operator. So sitting underneath my pilot, I didn't see a lot that went on. I was mainly just listening and not much sending of Morse code, even after we'd spent all this time learning how to send it 25 words a minute. And if we did have to send or listen to Morse, it came so slow it was hard to understand, because we weren't used to hearing it so slow. And now we get to this place at Bassingbourne, and they're teaching us, teaching the pilots how to fly these Liberators. They're the American, the other daylight one, beside their Flying Fortress, they had these 4-engine Liberator. And even while we were there, and we were going to go out to Japan or to Burma when we'd finished training on Liberators, but one of them crashed during training, and I thought how sad it was that this Tex Morton, McNulty, and I can't think of the third fellow's name, but how sad it was for them to be killed after the war in Europe's over. I'm sure everybody at home says, oh, they're as good as home, and they got killed in training. But then again, there's over 1,000 Air Force fellows killed in training, and this is where I'm talking about before, how just a chance remark, or at one stage while we're at Morton and Marsh, they used to, the cloud would just sit and we couldn't fly for days, and then so I was near enough, it's good enough, and off you'd go, you know, to get the training in. And one day we were, my pilot says, well, you know, we're nearly out of petrol here. I can't find my way down. You know, put your parachute on, we'll let you know and give you minutes to spare, sort of thing. But all of a sudden we see upturned faces of this little village, Morton and Marsh, of people looking at us, because we must only been, well, 100 feet or so, but I don't know how Graham found his way down, but we were on the ground in no time, and it didn't come to a matter of parachuting into the out of a plane into cloud and to heaven knows where. But oh, there's some amazing things happen like that. There's one night I was at a dance and a pilot came up to me and said, you got a crew? I said, oh yeah. He said, I'm looking for a new crew. He'd been flying and sitting on his parachute, because a lot of the pilots used to sit on the chute to give themselves a height, and so that was on all the time, whereas the rest of the crew would have a harness on and they'd carry the parachute like a handbag or a case, you know, and just a matter of clipping the case onto the chute before you jumped, hopefully. But anyway, this fellow, he had a mid-air collision, and he said next thing he knew he was in a field with sheep bleating. He said, I thought I was in heaven, you know, it sounded like a, you know. But as I said that, it just reminded me how the skies in England were pretty crowded. And I remember this one night, it would have been Morton and Marsh, because Windies, the Wellington bomber, twin engine. And I remember this plane, so plain, just, we're just flying straight, and all of a sudden there's a buffeting, and I switched over to my pilot to hear, see what was going on, and he's taking big breaths and saying, oh gosh, well not exactly, but he had a few favourite words, but he kept on repeating, and I didn't realise then, it was just that he was in shock so much. But by this time we're flying straight and level again, so there was no worry. But another plane had shot across in front of us, and we'd get caught in a slipstream, and that was a matter of probably a thousandth of a second, you know, would have been a mid-air collision, and with little hope of getting out, because I just disintegrate. But this is what I say to people, that it's either you either become a fatalist, or you say, well, Providence decreed that didn't want to see me just yet, you know. But none of us knew that 50 years on we'd be sitting here talking to you about into a microphone and saying, well, yeah, had we known that, well, I mean, there wouldn't have been near so much more sweaty underwear. And I mean sweaty underwear, because I didn't realise until recent years that some of us talking about when you're scared, your glands on your back of your neck open up so much that, and the sweat would, well, particularly some of these, we found the English blokes, they either showered more than we did, or they never showered, or hardly showered at all. Some of us from North Country, we were our two gunners, and we got to one place, and I think after 4 days I asked where the showers were. But anyway, when they'd load us into a small van to go out to the bombers, used to say, oh, that's promised you, they stink. But we probably had as much BO as them, with just the glands and the neck opening up, with just, not terror, but scared enough to say, well, I shouldn't, what the hell am I doing here? But I just got to do it, because they used to say that some people would go LMF, that was lack of moral fibre, and they'd de-rank them down to the LAC and send them back home. And I used to think, well, if it was a pilot that did that, I used to say, well, good luck to you, because, I mean, if you didn't, you were going to kill somebody. But I used to say, I think it takes more guts to say that I haven't got the guts, and well, just to just go ahead and cross your fingers.
Was any of the April